Felger and Mass.
Little sport dork orgy. So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
So sporty.
Oh, yeah.
Sports and sports and sports.
Oh, yeah.
Sports in your face.
Oh, yeah.
Sports.
Felger and Mass.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, Boston sports fans are going to have two TVs, you know, the one Red Sox game right there and the Patriots game right there. So, and you know, probably halftime of our game, the Red Sox game will be up or something. So, I mean, you got to give them credit. Our fans, those Boston fans, New England fans, I mean, they're diehard fans, not just for football, but for every sport around here. So, you know, they'll find a way to watch both.
Oh, Maz, it's so sporty. Oh, it's just so sports, sports, sports. Oh, it's just so wonderful, isn't it? So wonderful. You do it. You got to figure out how to get two TVs. I should have. Do you have that kind of rig set up at home? You should.
Well, I can do it with my iPad, yeah.
Yeah.
So I can sit on the sofa, watch one game on the big TV, and have an iPad on my lap.
No, I got it.
But like, you want the two TVs in your office.
Yeah, I mean, you're a sports guy. You're a sports talk radio host. You make tons of money. Like, you should have that all wired in your AV system at home. Like, two TVs on one wall. You
Next
should.
Negotiation.
You command that sort of thing. Which is to say, I should as well, but I don't. So I need an extra long coaxial cable. Is that what that thing is? The long white thing?
Something like that.
Or you just, you know, join the future and watch it on your phone.
No,
like
I have that. I can do that. I do that now. I do that now.
I said tablet,
That's not the same thing. I don't watch it on the phone. But, it's so sporty. Oh, my God, the sports. It's just a big ball, two of them, if you want, of sports right on your ginch all weekend.
Absolutely. Quintessentially Boston.
It's so good. It's so sporty.
Take that, American bitches.
So we're going to talk about it all day long. All day long. Red Sox, Patriots, basically. I will have a Bruins minute for you. But most importantly, it's agenda-free Friday. So anything's on the table. Anything from the week we've gotten to or have yet to get to, you set the agenda with your phone calls. We give you open thoughts and then we go to you. Simple as that. Maz, why don't you lead us off?
I was going to ask Murray actually to lead us off.
Yeah, Murray, lead us off.
Well, after the Bruins game was in hand, I switched over to the Giants-Eagles game, Thursday Night Football, always a favorite of mine. And it was truly a humbling experience for me because it was a night of taking bagels for yours truly. Because last year, late in the season, I called New York Giants head coach Ben McAdoo a complete a-hole for benching Eli Manning for Geno Smith. How dare you do this, especially when we know you're all going to get fired. This is Eli Manning. I defended Eli Manning in the past, even feared the big doofus because, you know, he gets into the playoffs for whatever the hell reason. He's unflappable. You can't kill him. And so, you know, I kind of respect Eli Manning. Hell, I even tried to make a case for him on the Saturday show a year or two ago to say Eli Manning is going to be a Hall of Famer. I said the Giants, right to use their second pick in the draft this year on a running back. Get Eli some help. Use it on Saquon Barkley. And if you did watch last night, it's obvious Saquon Barkley is a special talent. If you have eyes that work, you can see that. But they should have taken a quarterback. What I watched last night, and if you watched this game, is a 37-year-old quarterback in Eli Manning, or 38, whatever the hell he is, who should be brought out back like an old mangy dog and put down. He's toast. He's done. He's the weak link on that team. He's awful. And not only can he not play, he's terrified of playing the position. He won't throw downfield. There was a stretch. Until Odell Beckham Jr. finally like fought for a third down, they were like 0 for 15 or 0 for 16 for their on third down, including like they hadn't picked up a third down since week 4. They're awful, and it's because of Eli Manning. And more than anything else in watching that, because I am a Patriots honk at my heart, it makes me sick to my stomach to see that guy play that position like that and know deep down the Patriots lost. Not one, but two Super Bowls to Eli Manning, who, again, if you watch last night, and it's obvious, and they've had some primetime games already this season, he's cooked. He can't play. He's timid, and he's terrified to throw downfield, and it's not like he doesn't have the weapons. Eli Manning is done.
Maz, your opening take.
In fact, both quarterbacks who beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl were in the building there last night. How do you like that one? If you were looking to harness all your bad energy in one place, well, there you go. So, look, Red Sox start the American League Championship Series tomorrow night against the Oakland A's, as we know. I don't need to tell you that. And I don't think this part of the meeting with Houston or the Red Sox postseason is getting enough attention. We touched on it, and we need to touch on it more. Mookie Betts. What is he exactly? What's Mookie? What is he? It's 11 postseason games now. 11, and he's hitting 238 with an OPS of 667 with zero home runs. Zero. He hit 188 in the series against the Yankees. And if you were to tell me, well, he played good defense and he ran the bases, well, true, he did. He contributed in other areas. But if I want a guy who will play good defense and run the bases well, I can get myself another Jackie Bradley pretty easily. I'm not asking Mookie Betts to be Jackie Bradley. So I want to know, what do we have here? Is this another Alex Rodriguez? Is this what we got? And it's too early for that, but this series is going to go a long way towards telling us that. If Betts has a good series, then fine. We put off the talk, and we say Mookie Betts basically or probably is what we think he is.
But you just invoked Alex Rodriguez?
If Mookie Betts has a bad LCS, don't we start looking at him that way?
It's strong.
Don't we start looking at him that way?
I never thought of it that way. I mean, to compare him to the all-time greatest postseason choker of my lifetime feels a little strong. No, I don't.
I said start looking at him.
Because I don't feel like the samples would be big enough.
Okay, but again, it's 11 games now. Let's say they go 6 or 7 and it's 18 games and he still doesn't have a home run and he's hitting 230 when he is a guy who during his regular season career has an OPS of almost 900. So I admit, it is. It's early. It's early to invoke that comparison. I did it on purpose.
No, that's fair.
So his OPS career in the post regular season is 888.
I see you over there, Maz. I know what you're doing.
It's over 200 points lower in the playoffs. And here's the other one that gets me. Mookie Betts, if you look at him, for a guy that plays the way he plays, doesn't strike out a lot. Mookie Betts had 180 hits this year, half of which were for extra bases. He only had 91 strikeouts. So he basically gets two hits for every time he strikes out. And that has been true in his career. Okay, the number for his career is 789 career hits, 363 strikeouts. Better than 2-1. You know what it is in the postseason? 10 hits, 9 strikeouts. 10 hits in 11 postseason games. He strikes out every game as much as he gets a hit. So look, all I'm saying is it's time for Betts to step up. You're going up against now the best team in baseball over the last 2 years, not one. I don't know if the Astros are going to win the World Series again or not. But if Mookie Betts has a series like he did against the Yankees, they're probably not going to win.
All right, my open take is Patriots, and it's simply, we talked about it yesterday, but I'll just sort of reiterate it. This is a game they always win. This is one of these litmus test games where I will know what kind of season I'll get a tip-off, in other words, of what kind of season we're looking at here, truly. Because in the past, this is always the kind of game they won. Overhyped opponent, lots of tape, lots of run-up, history with them. Your building, Sunday night football, a lot of energy, if not the point spread, because the Pats are still favored, but a lot of energy is going towards the other side. They've usually won this kind of game and always performed in this spot. I feel like almost always they perform in this spot. And, you know, for 18 years, they've gotten to this spot, and you'll hear, you know, Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels at the end, because they do this a lot. They'll say, well, so much for the Patriots to climb. All those calls about, you know, they'll play the blah game. They do that as much as anyone. They do it every week to some other, you know, unsuspecting market. They'll do it this week. I mean, if the Patriots are the Patriots, we'll be hearing that again this week. Again, you got pantsed by this team last year. There's been a lot of hype behind that team. How you got pantsed by that team was the big play, which you can take away as well as anyone if you're just smart. If you just get back, which Bill can do. So you've seen these guys coming. They're not sneaking up on you. In fact, they've got more energy behind them just in terms of the public sentiment than you do. You have all that history of what they did to you last year. So all that tape, all that motivational stuff, this should be a win for the Patriots. If this is the Patriots team that we've come to know over the last 18 years, this is a win. And it changes the whole narrative into Monday and who's really at the top in the AFC and really where are the Patriots. And if they are the same team, that's what happens, because that's what's always happened in the past. Those are our opening thoughts. What are yours? 617-779-0985. We will get this out of the way. Our most annoying caller gets to go first, so you don't have to listen to him the rest of the day. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, thank you for the great introduction, Felger.
20 seconds.
Go.
All right, 2 points in 20 seconds. Pats versus Sox. Who will do better ratings? I say the Pats, even though the Sox are in a playoff game. Why? Because they're playing Houston. If they were playing the Yankees, it'd be a horse of a different color. Secondly, the Pats will win this weekend. As you eloquently said, this is what they do. The show isn't over. I expect them to win easily.
Okay. Easily, I don't know. I just expect them to come up in this spot.
That might have been his best call ever.
Well, I think since we put the shot clock on him, it's improved. TV ratings, what are they going to be?
Oh, the Patriots are going to destroy the Red Sox.
Don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, I would say 2-1 at least.
Well, nationally, but locally?
No. We're not talking nationally. We're talking locally.
Yeah. I bet you the Patriots get something in the range of a, you know, I don't know, in the 30s, 35, and the Red Sox are in the teens somewhere.
Well, that's, no, it's got to be closer than that.
You think so?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't.
Yeah. I mean, a lot will depend on what the tenor of each game is. The Red Sox are losing 10-1 or winning 10-1, right? I mean, you'll switch over and vice versa. So, like, but just all things being equal, if they're both competitive games, it'll be closer than that.
No, I don't think so. But I'm eager to see it. Maybe I'm wrong. I just think that a football game's always going to draw people and everyone will catch up on the baseball later.
Exactly. It's just, I mean, in this, I don't mean to dig on baseball or anything because these playoff games are great, but football's just a more compelling product in a three-hour win. It just is. I mean, that's not even really debatable. And so and it's a big game on top of it. I mean, this ain't no throwaway game. It's a big, important game. So, yeah, the football will win, but it'll be both. Like Gronk said, I'm going to try and figure out how to get both TVs. I got to get a coaxial cable that's going to run from one room to the next, which really, given my stature, Murray, is inexcusable. I need two TVs mounted on the wall because I have those resources at my hand, and I'm too cheap to do it.
Sounds like the help's going to be working overtime.
There is. I'm putting a call to my people.
sounds like we need another endorsement.
Because this is a joke. Exactly. It is a joke. Gronk is so right. It's like, well, because there's plenty of nights where it's like we do this thing where we say, all right, you got the Bruins, or you know, I got the Bruins, you got the Celtics, and you got, so because we can't watch all three, so we have assignments, and we each watch one, which is ridiculous, given our stature. You absolutely have to have a man room with multiple TVs on the wall that's wired in with an expensive AV system, and like that should already be in place. How come you don't have that already?
How come you don't?
I'm explaining this to you because I'm cheap.
Or you have wives that don't want to have those kind of rooms.
No. My office is my office.
Yeah, my wife wouldn't care about that either. But see, Murray, my guess is that my office is not quite as big as Mike's office. So I think that there is an issue with wall space in my office potentially. But
oh, no, I got plenty of room.
Yeah. The Prince of Brunei over here, who's got, you know, plenty of wall space, can probably put three TVs up there if he would like.
Whoever phone that is, turn it off. We're off and running on an agenda-free Friday. More of your phones after this.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hello, Astro, my old friend. This town is after me again. All those beat guys who are mean twin. And all those radio jerks who keep teasing. A bad decision is truly what I have made, but I got paid. Oh, how I wish I hadn't come to Boston.
The 0-1 swung on and ripped to deep left field. That ball is going to be off the wall. Torres scores. It's a ribby single off the wall by McCutchen. The Yankees take a 3-0 lead.
And this is ugly as David Price leads here, the booing here.
You know, my spirits are down. My confidence isn't down. You know, I'm looking forward to getting back out there and getting another opportunity.
I trust the guy.
This is going to be the story of the weekend. Either way, Price comes through finally and they win, or he gags again. Like, that's the story. It's just set up. And boy, you know, Cora, has he stuck his neck out there with this guy. And that last cut you heard right there was Cora saying, I trust him. And we'll give you more Cora from yesterday on how, you know, why he's going with Price and how he feels about Price.
I trust the guy.
But that was one of his lines. I trust the guy. I don't believe you, Alex. I don't believe you. I don't believe you. I'm sorry.
I trust the guy.
I don't think you do. How could you? How could you possibly? How could anyone? Now, if you want to say, I believe in the matchups, I believe in past performance, I believe in certain ballparks, etc. Like all the reasons they're using him, his track record against the Astros, he makes more sense in Boston than in Houston. Also, the thing about the timing with the bullpen, I think, is significant. Not just that there's an off day the next day. It's that Sale's going the day before. So you figure your bullpen's not going to be taxed the day before, and it has a day off the day after. So game two is like really an ideal spot bullpen usage-wise for if and when he craps the bed, you can really use your bullpen. So all that makes sense. If that's why you're using him, okay, I got it. You're doing it because you trust him? Stop. I don't believe you.
It's a Francona move. It's a Francona move. The guy you doubt the most, you come out and you give him a public vote of confidence. That's what you do. Because you know you got to get in his head and get him to believe it because he doesn't believe it, which is the real problem. Price is going to get on that mound and crap his pants again. And you have to do everything in your power to make sure he doesn't. So you got to convince him he's better than he's been.
I trust him. Alex doesn't lie much. He doesn't do much BSing on the podium, but he can't possibly feel that way.
Yeah. Well, there's no way he would ever say the opposite, though, right?
Yeah, but again, I mean, it's like you can trust. I trust the analytics. I trust the matchups. I trust our methodology. Fair. I would too. You guys have made a lot of good decisions recently. I trust David. I trust him. Mm-mm. No, that's a lie.
No, because no one possibly could. I mean, who could possibly trust him at this stage? 10 starts, 0 wins, 0 for 10. I mean, we're not talking about, like, you know, 0 for 2. it's 10 starts.
Agenda Free Friday, everything on the board. The price thing will be the story coming out of the weekend, I think. Emilio in Rhode Island, what do you got for us?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. So, okay, the Red Sox need to win this series. You know, they won 108 games. They're not the little engine that could. So people have to stop being like, oh, well, they got out of the first round. That's good enough. No. You know, I know they're probably not favored in this series, but they got to show some grit, and they got to show that they're a 108-win team and go out there and win, even if it takes them 7 games. Because I hate when teams, you know, go out there, have the best record in whatever sport, and fall flat, you know, in the postseason. No, we've done that before. You know,
absolutely, Emilio. Absolutely, I'm surprised people feel like Murray, like he's satisfied, or they've accomplished something. I mean, all they did against New York, we talked about this yesterday, was not choke. When you have the highest payroll in baseball and the best win total in baseball, you have to have a good postseason.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you have to win
again,
at all.
The win total was weighted because the American League was garbage this year, and this was basically the same core, save for the manager and J.D. Martinez, who, of course, did make a massive improvement to the offense, but I don't know, my expectations were minimal because I didn't really believe in them.
I just think, again, highest payroll in baseball, record win total, you got to do something in the postseason. You can't just win around. You can't just win around.
No. They got to go nose to nose with these guys now. And again, I if they lose and it's done so in a way that, let me rephrase it. If Houston beats them, I can live with that. If the Red Sox puke on themselves and lose, I can't live with that. Like that, to me, that's how I frame it in my head.
Jennifer in Foxborough has a Patriots thought for us. Hi, Jennifer.
Hey there, first time, long time. Thoughts on Chris Hogan? Brady hasn't been throwing to him, and he was out of practice yesterday. Thoughts on him being packaged for a trade before the deadline? Thanks for taking my call.
Okay, Jennifer. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what their thought process is. If you're asking me, mistake.
I want everybody I can get at those spots.
Absolutely. And even though Hogan has fallen out of favor, it feels like, I'd still take him over another guy off the street that they got to start cold with. So, no. And I was just trying to look up his salary. I don't care what it is. This is a guy, you know.
It's like $4 million, isn't it?
Yeah. It might be too much. But so, yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? Take away another piece from Brady?
I'd rather pay him $4 million than Cordarrelle Patterson $3.25 million.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you very much for that. 617-779-0985. Matt says if Betts has another really bad series, we start to think of him like Alex Rodriguez. How do you feel about that comparison, Billy in Rhode Island?
Well, I didn't care for it, and not because I'm a Boston fan. It's just that the guy's going to be the MVP. He's a leadoff hitter. I mean, there's a lot of guys that were trying to get that, including J.D. Martinez. He's a big Stanton fan, which he tried to sell us onto the Red Sox all this year. But Betts is a hell of a ball player.
Of course he is.
I understand it's the playoffs, but I'm going to tell you something. Regardless what does in the playoffs, that guy helped that team get to where they are today. There's no doubt about it. He's the best ball player in baseball.
Okay. Well, so let me just stop you here. Let me add this on because Matt in Framingham has the same thought. Go ahead, Matt.
Well, yeah. Well, first, a few of my buddies have been talking about how Sunday night, you know, how it sucks, how both games are going to be on at once. But I don't think it's going to be a big deal because, you know, if we go by trends, the game's going to be out of hand by the time the Patriots start. But I wanted to talk about what you said, Maz, about Betts. And, you know, I disagree. I feel like it was a little bit strong. I mean, he was 3 for 16, you know, not to a little bit below 200, two RBIs. So and he hasn't been good in the past. So yeah, I see what you're saying, but I would say something like what we saw out of Stanton.
So let me stop you, Matt. I think fans are reluctant to put a choker label on Betts because they like him so much.
That's exactly what it is. We all do like him. He's a likable player. But the fact of the matter is the numbers haven't been good in the postseason. So look, the A-Rod comparison, I said this to you, is strong. It is. Of course it is. A-Rod went through it for years. But the point is, if he has a bad LCS, we start saying, what is this guy? What is it? Let's go. Like, and I went back and looked at a couple of the at-bats with Sabathia in the last game. On the first at-bat, he grounded out to shortstop. He got a meatball on that pitch. It was a freaking meatball. And he grounded out to short. Now, the next time up, Sabathia actually pitched him pretty well. And he got, you know, he got Mookie away on the first one and inside on the second one and tied him up. And so now it's 0-2 and Mookie doesn't know what's coming. I actually did some images of this on our website, too.
Nice.
98.5thesportshub.com. You can find it there. So Sabathia, I give him credit for the second one. But the fact is, this is now 11 games. It's 11 post. I don't think it's wrong to start looking at him. We all know how good he is during the regular season. And do I think he's going to turn it around? Probably. Because deep down, I don't think he's A-Rod. I don't think. But the numbers are what they are. They haven't been good.
Gender-free Friday, everything on the table. Cam and Taunton thus has a Celtics thought. Hi, Cam.
How's it going, guys? Mike, by the way, every game in this LCS up to Game 7, except for Game 1, is going to be conflicted with another Boston sports game, just to give you that heads up.
Okay, but Bruins-Calgary doesn't count. I'm sorry. It just doesn't. As much as I'm going to watch the hockey, it doesn't count as a conflict. It doesn't.
Okay. This Celtics season, obviously you guys are going to have a lot of Red Sox and Patriots to talk about coming up. So I'm going to get to it now. The honeymoon's over, guys. Honeymoon's over. It's championship expectations for this team now. And I'm glad the team, Jaylen Brown, for example, is embracing it. But it's like, I don't want to hear any more little engine code. You're no longer the Bridges, as Murray would say, with IT and Jay Crowder. It's now championship or bust.
Do you believe that this year, Cam? So wait a minute. They don't win the title this year. You're disappointed this year?
Yes, they can beat Golden State, Mike. They're good enough to beat Golden State. Golden State's falling apart. They're exhausted. They're fighting with each other, and they're going to fall apart after this year. Golden State's as vulnerable now as they've ever been. They can win it this year.
Okay. No, to say they can win it is different than saying you'll be pissed off if they don't.
I will be.
It's a little early for that. It's a little early for that.
If they don't win the title this year, I'm disappointed.
What does Grandy say? Celtics in four?
If they don't win the title this year, James Stewart will be disappointed.
Grandy just hanging up.
And yeah, no, he's chilling back there. I got to talk to you. Don't leave. I'll catch you during the break. They got to be in the finals. Okay, if they get to Golden State and they get their, I shouldn't say if they get their asses kicked, but if they lose in six, is there really shame in that?
If they get swept, there's no shame in it. You're not there yet to them. And where do you get the falling apart thing? The team that's won two straight?
No idea.
They had locker room issues last year, and now they're adding Boogie Cousins.
So what? It's the NBA. Like we discussed yesterday.
Right, dysfunction is part of the recipe.
Yeah, like, I mean, yes. So what? Yes, it's the NBA. They'll put it on a reality show. Like,
no, as you said, in 2008, maybe there was more dysfunction with the Celtics than we realized at the time.
They're still bitching at each other.
Which is great drama.
I guess.
Do more of those specials.
But the Warriors falling apart thing? I don't know. I haven't quite seen that yet.
No, I'm not holding my breath on that one, no.
We continue on Agenda Free Friday with your wonderful Fells right after Murray's update.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong, sorry.
It's Felger and Mass.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Here we go. It's going to be Jujhar Kara against Kevin Miller. They drop the gloves. They're going to fight at the high slot. Both guys going right-handed. Miller grabs a hold. Kara with a right that missed. Miller with a couple of jersey jabs. Off comes Kara's helmet. Miller with a right. Kara with a right that missed. Miller with a right cross that missed. Kara with a big right that missed. Miller a right. Miller a left. They move out into the neutral zone. Miller switched hands. Kara's grabbed a hold of him. The linesman will step in very quickly, and both benches salute the efforts from both combatants.
Yeah, Juju Kara took a couple pops from Kevin Miller, two in a row. He hung right in there, didn't go down. Came back with a couple pops of his own. He's been looking for something. He had the penalty in the first period that actually led to a Bruins goal, but it was after he got hit by Wagner earlier in the first, so he's been involved in this game. And Kevin Miller perfectly willing to sit back and trade punches with him.
All right, here comes the Bruins minute. I'm going to play a highlight for you. Could have gone with the David Pastrnak goal. I know that was sort of nifty, but I'm sorry. Give me a fight. Give me a good fight. They're few and far between. That was a good one. That was a heavyweight bout. I don't know who that dude is in Edmonton, but big, hairy dude wants to go. Kevin Miller gives it to him. That was tremendous. That's the best thing I can say about the Bruins last night. That they, two good things I'll say about them is that they responded physically. Edmonton's, once again, circling the drain. They have no idea how to play. So the coach gets up into them yesterday at practice. And, so they tried to respond physically. It was a good physical game. I mean, there were a couple fights. Backus got into it with someone. Lucic, did you see Lucic drill DeBrusque in the corner? A clean, totally clean check, but just throttled him. And then Corrali sent someone through the glass.
I saw that.
When the glass collapsed. Like, it was so, I the first good thing I'll say about the Bruins is that they responded physically. Okay, good. Two, I like Yaroslav Halak. I don't know. Who's looked better so far?
Oh, Halak.
Is it really even debatable? Those are two things I liked. Here's what I don't like. They're still just a one-horse pony, a one-trick
totally
pony.
Right.
I mean, Krejci and Nordstrom connected on a goal. Good. And Krejci was a little better, I suppose. They scored four. Three were Marchand, Bergeron, and Pastrnak with an insane move.
Yeah, perfection line.
So it's like, all right.
Perfection line.
So what are you showing me? So what, you can get away with that in the regular season. Teams don't match up as much as they do in the playoffs. And they don't send checking lines after you. And they don't, concentrate on deep pairings and defensive zone faceoffs and blah, blah, blah. I mean, they do some of it in the regular season. So they do some of it. But if you have a big dominant through the regular season against horrible teams coming through, those guys are going to put up a million points. Like, so what? All right, I know they can do this. What about the rest of the team?
No, look, it's a legit question because it's the same thing every night. It is. It's the same thing with every game. You look up and it's Bergeron with three goals. Marchand last night got his first. Pastrnak's got the other one. It's the same thing over and over and over again.
It's like, I know you can do this. I got it. You get into the playoffs, you're going to run against smart teams, good teams, and the whole thing changes where you get the number one deep pairing every single time and the number one checking unit every single time. And we've seen it. As good as you are, you'll get shut down. It happened to the Bruins last year against Tampa, and they had nothing else, nothing. So, I even get aggravated when I see the erection line do their thing. It's like, I got this. This doesn't show me anything.
Boring.
I'm not as aroused as everybody else. And I mean, the Pastrnak play is special. Like, that was, the Bruins ever had a guy who could do that?
Maybe Middleton years ago, but that's it. Like, again, and just to me, it's about the space or the lack of space.
Middleton could finish. He could shoot. Could he dangle like that?
Yeah. Around the net, yeah. Stick handle, between the legs.
Between the legs?
He wasn't as quick as this guy on his feet, but with the stick, he was pretty good. But that thing last night, that was redonkulous. Holy crap. And for him to be able to maneuver the puck like that, that close to the goal, and flip it in, insane.
So what kind of team do they have? I don't know. I don't know what kind of team they have. That first line is special. And through the regular season, they should be able to run roughshod. We're just with that line. But what else do they have? So that's still, that's where I'm at. And the goaltending thing is encouraging. I wanted to see what Halak looked like. And he looks pretty good to me. He looks pretty good. He got lucky. I mean, did you see the puck that trickled along the goal line? Have you ever seen that before?
Yes, and Chara with his 8-foot reach, sticking his stick across and kicking it out, or, slapping it out of there.
So Halak had some luck, but he also had some really big stops. And he just looked solid. He's looked better than Rask, which is good. Because it feels like now every year Rask needs that wake-up call. So you have someone now to challenge him. Good. Like, that's encouraging. And it looks... it's too long to go for me to say this, but if Halak has something left in the tank, that's good. There's nothing but goodness there. Because either it pushes Rask or you have someone else to play. So hopefully that holds for them. But I need to see some other guys. I need to see some other guys score and some other lines really do something. I got it. And I really think they should move Pastrnak down. You can always flip that switch and send him back up there if you have to. But try and get some balance here.
I mean, in the long run, they'd be way better off having Pastrnak on the second line.
I think.
No, no, there's no disputing it. Last year, that line was more productive than maybe any line in the league. And what did it get them? They got spanked by Tampa. If they don't have secondary scoring, they're screwed.
So, you know, even in a great night like that, the first line frustrates me. Just because of how they're big. I don't know. I need to know what else they have. Pat in Boston. Go ahead, Pat.
So, I agree with you with putting Pastrnak down on the second line. But I still think the problem lies with Krejci. I mean, how many hip surgeries has this guy had since, you know, the cup runs? Every offseason, the guy's having a hip surgery. I think Krejci now, at this point in his career, if he's center on your third line, I think he's in a good spot there. He's just not a second line guy. And I wonder if, you know, people starting to say that maybe the window is closing on the window of opportunity to win another cup with Bergeron and Chara is starting to close. And if that Bergeron's play is lacked, but I wonder if this is going to push their hand to go get another, you know, number two center.
Well, they tried. I mean, they were in on Tavares. So, I don't know. I still haven't seen, I guess Krejci's minutes have been down a little bit. But it's not like, you know, he's still clearly the number two guy. That's the number two line. So, I mean, I haven't even seen them, you know, there's nothing to challenge Krejci internally.
Well, and it feels like, look, that comment that you talked about yesterday. I mean, yeah, apparently he made a similar comment last night. I was reading today that he was asked about Donato being benched and he took blame for it. So, you know, he says, look, one's on me.
So this guy, he's totally changed his tune. Someone got through to him. Yeah, well, good. So he's changed his tune for the better. It's on me. I have to be better. It's not about my line mates. And in fact, he was saying so that he said the Donato benching was his fault.
Yeah, it's in a story by Matt Porter in the Globe where, and I'll read you the paragraph. Krejci took the blame for Donato's benching, calling him, quote, a really smart player, end quote, whom he regretted not helping. Then Krejci says, I didn't have my A game. That's on me. That's what it is. I make players around me better. I didn't do that the last couple of games.
So I'm not sure if he said that again or that was just recycling from the day before. Either way, Krejci is at least saying the right thing. Fine. They can't win with one line. So that's that. That's the Bruins take. We'll get back to your phones here on Agenda Free Friday right after this.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
I love it.
You were right, Maz.
I just keep loving it more and more.
Bore my listeners to death.
I finally feel alive.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sounds good.
They're talented, man. They're very good. I have an idea. I don't know if he's going to work. That doesn't guarantee if it's going to work. You know, everybody's like, oh, Alex knows them. I'm like, yeah, but they're still good players. You know, they're pretty good. We'll talk and we'll do our thing. You know, not because we're playing the Astros. Now we're going to play different. We like to play fast, put pressure on people. I don't know. Hopefully I learned something from them that is going to make a difference in one of the four games that we want to win. So if that happens, well, you know, being familiar with them really helped. But it doesn't guarantee anything.
It's Alex Cora on his knowledge of the Astros. Should be a very interesting subplot to this series. All right, back to your phones. Again, Agenda Free Friday is brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges they don't. PlanetFitness.com. Jimmy New Hampshire on David Price. Hi, Jimmy.
Hi, guys. Very quickly before I get to that, Mike, you always say that every dog has his day, right?
Yes.
So I believe all of our dogs need to have their days this series to win. But I think the dog of game two is going to go the way of old Yeller and get killed. And I'm frustrated with that because I think the narrative that the fans are going to say are that Dave Dombrowski and the analytics are what forced Cora to start Price on game two. And so that's going to be his out. So which is it, Red Sox fans? Is it Cora's the great manager that we saw against the Yankees, or he's Dave Dombrowski's puppet? Thanks, guys.
Yeah, I think he's closer to the second, and I say that with no malice in my heart. I mean, I'm just...
You just think it's sort of a state of the times.
It's the way it works. It's what it's what baseball people tell me over and over and over again, that more and more teams are run through the analytics department in the front office, and the manager is there to execute those plans. And his real job is clubhouse and personality management. So that's all. That's not giving Alex Cora a break. In fact, that's taking credit away from him. Because a lot of these decisions we've had so far, start Holt, sit Holt, start Nunez, start Devers, blah, blah, blah. I think those are all group. Those might not be his either. So, but with David Price, don't tell me that this is a one-on-one personal evaluation judgment. It's not. It can't be.
No, no, no way.
Because the guy looks like he's totally lost in an incapable moment. The only thing you have to go on is data and analytics and matchups. And so that's what's driving this.
Oh, yeah. No, no. He's rolling the dice here a little. There's no question about it. He knows it. I mean, look, I don't doubt that Cora consults, you know, or the analytics guys give him that. That definitely all happens. There's no two ways about that. But at the end of the day, to me, the manager still has veto power. Like, you know, if he really doesn't want to do something, he can do it.
Are you sure it's not the other way around?
Well, look, if it comes down to, I can tell you that under Theo and Francona, they get into disagreements over guys. And that at the end of the day, Francona filled out the lineup card. As crazy as that sounds.
Because Theo's smart.
Yeah, I think he also knew, right, not to ruffle feathers when he didn't need to ruffle them.
So, I mean, also just think of the dynamic. I mean, Francona was an established manager.
Sure.
You know, won his first year. Cora, it's his first job. He's going to do what they tell him.
Yeah, to a degree, though. He's a different kind of cat. I mean, I think. I don't know. Like, I don't know. You might be right, Mike.
I mean, I'm just saying, the thing with Price does not feel like a managerial personnel decision where the guy's looks in his eye. I mean, when Alex says, I trust him, is like, how could he possibly?
No, I don't believe that either, but I believe that Cora believes in the numbers.
Yes. So he believes in the methodology. I believe in our methodology. Fair. I would too. I believe in our decision making. I believe in our analytics. I believe in the matchups. Great. I believe in him. I trust him.
Yeah, there's no way anybody could possibly say that with a straight face. Other than maybe Price's parents.
I trust a guy.
How could you possibly?
Or his wife or significant other, whatever. Or his dog.
Derek.
The mother-in-law that lives there.
Exactly.
I trust a guy.
Derek in Foxborough on the Patriots. Hi, Derek.
Yeah, I just had a thought on why I think the Patriots tried so hard to keep Josh McDaniels. I think they looked at all these teams that lost their offensive coordinator. Like the Falcons lost Shanahan. Now they suck. The Eagles lost Frank Reich. Now they kind of suck. I think they wanted to avoid that because Belichick's never really been an offensive play caller like a Bill Walsh. So I think that's why they tried so hard to keep him.
I think they tried so hard to keep him because he's the next guy.
Me too.
And I don't know. I think Bill Belichick is a brilliant offensive coach. I don't know about play calling. Like in-game play calling with the play sheet. Thank God I've never seen him do that. But I bet he could. And I think I'm beginning to buy in on his development of quarterbacks. I don't know. I just give him credit for Brady. I give him credit for Garoppolo. I think they got a great year out of Castle. So I think Bill can do that as well as anyone. They don't need Josh. I think if just every offensive coordinator they've had has been good. Charlie was great. Bill O'Brien we liked. Josh has been good a couple different times. I mean, I don't know. Feels to me like you can put whoever in there.
No, it's Bill.
And Brady.
Of course it's Brady. Yeah. Absolutely, yes. Absolutely it's Brady. But McDaniel's Stan, please, he's the heir apparent. He's the successor. That's what that's about.
Joe and Lincoln, your expectations with the Red Sox here. What do you got?
Yeah, first of all, you can't compare performance in the regular season to postseason in baseball like you can say in basketball. Look at the last play of the game, the Yankee series. The guy gets totally fooled, hits a little dribbler, a terrible at-bat, and you know, the great play by Nunez and Pierce. But if he got in a hit like he probably should have, who knows? The Yankees probably win that game easily. And, you know, the whole series could switch around. That doesn't happen in basketball or other sports. So I do think luck is a lot in baseball. You can't just, the Red Sox don't make it. You know, there could be lots of reasons. But
how about luck for Mookie Betts for 11 games?
Well, I want to talk about pressure. Yeah, that's what I want to say. Pressure definitely exists. I mean, Stanton clearly choked. In fact, we've got a new verb. To Stanton is to swing at a pitch out of the strike zone repeatedly.
Okay, so but hold on. So you're willing to say that? Wait, now you're willing to say that about Stanton, but I feel like you're reluctant to say that about Betts.
No. I think Betts is partially Stanton this year. I mean, he's had a couple of nice line drives, but he doesn't look like Mookie Betts. I've seen him, you know, bounce the ball to third base, weak ground to third base too many times. He's got to play better. I agree with Tony.
Okay, so the luck thing. I heard a caller to your baseball show last night, Maz, the baseball reporters.
Yep.
Guy going on and on about luck, and it's just the variance of it in the playoffs, and you just can't judge these guys based on what happens here because there's just too much. So I was screaming at the radio for you to ask him, so then you think the Yankees are better than the Red Sox? And the Red Sox just got lucky? I mean, something tells me he doesn't
think of that.
Something tells me he wouldn't have said that.
Of course he wouldn't have said that. So look, I think the Red Sox are, they played better than the Yankees, and I think they are better than the Yankees. When you weigh it out over the course of the year, all things, again, over that length of sample, I don't think you can possibly look at it and say the Red Sox got lucky. They're better than New York.
Fact.
And so, look, I'm getting a little irritated by the Betts thing because of what you said earlier. Everybody loves Mookie. Okay, he's a happy-go-lucky kind of player, and there's a lot to like there, and he's a dynamic ball player on top of it.
He's about to win the MVP.
But he's hitting .238 career in the postseason with an OPS in the mid-sixes. And he has more strikeouts than hits, or as many. Okay, and that's not the kind of player he is. So how do you want to justify that? So he's not choking? Craig Kimbrell choked in Game 4. They won anyway, but that was a choke job, and you could see it. And with Mookie, again, and I went through some of the at-bats, and look, it's only one game. But CeCe Sabathia, on the second pitch of the second at-bat, ran a 90-mile-an-hour pitch in on Mookie Betts, and he couldn't get around on it. Now, I thought Sabathia did a good job setting him up, but when you're a little tight, maybe your hands aren't as fast as they usually are. Like, that's all, and I just think Mookie's tight. Do I think he's going to come out of it? Yes. But his at-bats aren't the same.
Coming up next, the methodology they're using to go back to David Price. It's pretty much been revealed, and we'll tell you what it is. See how you feel about it. Coming right up after Murray's 90-second update here, there are no commercials.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.